Hello and welcome to another all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And later on today, we're going to relive one of our favorite traditions of this show and draft our A-10 all-fun teams for this year. But we're going to start the episode off with the biggest story of the week, which is, of course, the VCU Rams coming off of a blowout of Loyola Chicago and an epic final-minute win over Dayton. And joining us to talk VCU is Connor Bailey of the Black and Gold Fan Podcast. Connor, thanks for joining us.
First off, I appreciate both of you guys letting me on here. As you said, it's been a big week in Ramville. A week and a half ago, it didn't feel that way. So, I'm enjoying the last few wins right now. But like I said, I appreciate repping the Black and Gold Fan Podcast today, and I appreciate being on here.
Yeah, and you mentioned a week and a half ago, things were in bad shape. And I want to go all the way back and start there. I wrote on the Thursday morning after VCU lost to Duquesne, a game that seemed close, but honestly felt like a blowout for most of it, that VCU was starting to give off a lot of the same vibes as the 2020 team. Great non-conference. That team beat Will Wade and LSU. They looked like an at-large team going into A-10 play. And then in February, absolutely cratered after Marcus Evans missed a game or two and their offense just completely died. And we saw Duquesne take out Ace Baldwin. VCU's offense cratered. And things were starting to feel the same. They went in, played Davidson, and were down by 12 points 4 minutes into the game. Mike Rhodes took a timeout there. And I know it's only January, but it felt like the season was honestly starting to teeter there and the train might just be coming off the tracks. VCU's played great since that timeout. So what's happened? Why is this Rams team all of a sudden just so much better and especially looking like a quality offensive team after basically a month of looking dead on that end?
It's a great question you have right there. My pod mates and I, we had a podcast. I think it was after we had lost to Temple the first week of December, right before we played Jacksonville, and we ended up losing to Jacksonville at home too. But then we won four out of conference games. And we kind of said, who's a breakout player in the next, in the final non-conference games? Is it a guy like Josh Banks? Is it a guy like David Shriver? Is it Nick Kern? And towards the end of conference play, both a home game against Northern Illinois and a home game against Navy, Shriver shot the ball well, and Nick Kern had a couple steals each game. So you mentioned that Duquesne game. That was coming off about 4 days before that. On New Year's Eve, we played LaSalle at home. Kind of a lackluster win against a pillow fight level team. So not a win that really got me going. And then Duquesne, I mean, it ended up being, I think, a 9-point game. We lost by 20. I mean, plain and simple. It was a bad game. Former VCU player Trey Clark had an excellent game. And we looked like we didn't want to play the first 18 minutes of the game. But then you have Davidson, a noon tip-off all week long. I was kind of excited. I love noon tip-offs in basketball, like, hitting a little brunch beforehand and kind of getting loose and whatnot. But all of a sudden, Davidson, who, in my opinion, this is the worst Davidson team that – A-10 is experienced. I think it's pretty obvious. They're up 10-0 all of a sudden. And Mike Rhodes called a timeout. You mentioned that. And he brought in Nick Kern to the game. Kern's a guy, sophomore. He has long strides, not a shooter, but a great athlete from St. Louis. And he showed glimpses last year, but never fully got it going. He brings him into the game. He makes a steal or two. Next thing you know, we go on a run. Shriver hits a couple three. Well, he hit, I think it was 6-8 from three against Davidson. So I mentioned those two players that my team and my podcast team had mentioned back in December, guys that need to step up. Nick Kern and David Shriver are two guys that really stepped up against Davidson.
Yeah, and you mentioned the steals that Kern was getting in those games to spark the break. Maybe the most concerning thing when the Rams lost to Duquesne was the fact that their press basically just looked dead in that game. They were forcing some turnovers by pressuring ball handlers in the half court, but Duquesne turned the ball over once in the backcourt the entire game, and it just didn't look like an old VCU team. Now, one of the things we barely saw in that game was Nick Kern and his fellow super athlete off the bench, Josh Banks, who still doesn't play a ton, but Rhodes really was leaning on Jameer Watkins that day, and now he's kind of transitioned into a sixth man role. And you guys mentioned on your pod a pretty fun comparison for him in Melvin Johnson. He's a little bit bigger, but maybe he could thrive in a similar role.
And that's a great point you made. Josh Banks is someone who he was really good in the out of conference. He got popped in the face against LaSalle. And I think it was he did the very end of the first half or the beginning of the second half and missed the whole game. And then he didn't, it was weird. We don't really know if he didn't dress against Duquesne or not. It was kind of, I've always been confused about that game. But regardless, the next game after David, or the game after Davidson, Loyola Chicago plays. And, you know, Kern started that night. Apparently, within in the locker room, within that, an hour before tip, Coach Rhodes basically just told Nick, hey, you're starting tonight. Jameer, you're off the bench. And Jameer, his shooting's a little off, but he got to the foul line 10 times that night against Loyola. And, you know, with a guy his size against a Loyola team that, let's face it, they're just not good. he just took the ball to the rack a bunch, got hit, was 8 of 10 from the foul line, but we looked looser. And then now Loyola at the same time, we were also down 18-9 against Loyola. And then eventually they just turned the ball over way too much. We went up 3 at the half. But you did mention Melvin Johnson. Caleb from our podcast, he's the one who called that out. And Melvin, until his senior year, 2015-16, he was always up the bench because we had too much talent. Dayton's run into situations like that where they have good players that just it's hard for them to get a, they can't start because there's five other players ahead of them. So I think Jameer potentially run into a situation like that where he can come off the bench, be kind of a spark plug. But overall, Coach Rhodes kind of saying, hey, Nick, we need your defense early on because we're getting down 10-0 in these games. I'll sacrifice maybe a little offense for a fast break dunk and a couple steals.
And I'm glad you bring up Jameer Watkins too, because I think for the A-10 diehards like us, he was one of the most anticipated players coming into this season after missing all of last year with an ACL injury. I think it's interesting he's leading the team in usage rate by a pretty big margin. He's heavily involved in the offense. Do you think that's his best role suited for this team, where he's taking a lot of shots, constantly going to the rim, or do you think he would be better served in more of being a role player at this stage?
My prediction preseason was he's someone who would have a decent out of conference, and then conference play hits, he just takes off and he makes like a third team all conference. I thought he was a baller as a freshman. He was like a seventh man on his team in 2020-2021. You bring up a good point, and I've seen that on KenPom recently, how he, at least a game or two ago, he was still the highest usage player. Now, maybe that goes down a little bit. I think he's someone that, by not starting, we need to let the game kind of come to him more. I think they were focusing in too much on him. The Jacksonville game in December, that was coming off the Temple game where VCU gave up a bunch of points. I don't have the stat in front of us, but our defense was awful. But he had like 18 points at Temple, hit 4 threes. And in the Jacksonville game, he was 0 for 7 from the three-point line. And after the third one, I'm like, dude, you got a hitch in your shot right now. It's just take the ball to the rack. So I wouldn't mind seeing the offense. I mean, I've been kind of bleeding for it to go through none all year, but it still feels like none might be. I think a lot of us thought none was going to take off this year, and he's good. But I think Watkins is better served as the third or fourth scorer on the team instead of one or two.
Yeah, I can agree about hoping for a big Jaden Dunn breakout. Who's my big pick to make the all-conference this year. I think I had him second team, and sadly that didn't work out.
You had him seven or eight, didn't you?
Some a little bit too high next year, though.
So glad still I talked myself out of that the last second.
He's had some
he was my biggest dropper when I did more research before we did that episode.
He's been fine overall, but he just hadn't blown. He had a great game against Kennesaw State and then Oncon, but Ace was out that game. So, but he's someone I mentioned. I kind of wanted the offense to go through him, but honestly, as long as Ace is in the game, it kind of flows. And heck, the way Schreiber's shooting right now, just keep giving him the ball. But overall, Watkins is someone I think he's better as a third or fourth scorer.
Well, but that's where I wanted to go next. So VCU, after a pretty disappointing offensive showing in the non-conference, and something that I think Ram fans have criticized a lot this year, all of a sudden they're shooting 47% from three through five games in the conference season. And certainly Davidson and Dayton were both introduced to David Shriver, who's 16 for his last 20. What have you seen differently from him other than just the shots going in all of a sudden the last couple games? Because he's a guy that came in from Hartford with pretty high expectations as someone that would be able to shoot the ball, something the Rams needed. And he just wasn't a factor the first 10 games or so. So has he been – what have you seen differently from him down the stretch here?
Great question. Early on in the non-con, he had a good game against Morgan State at like 11 points. I went up to Brooklyn for the Barclays – or the Legends Classic at the Barclays Center. I missed the Arizona State game, but I saw the Pitt game. He had 2 threes in the second half against Pitt. So he played well early on. I throughout December thought he had a, I never mentioned him on the pod. I mentioned it to my dad. I was like, I think he has a hitch in his shot right now. It just looked like he was off. But I'll be honest, you mentioned some VCU fans criticism. I was at a point where I was like, pull the plug on it. This ain't working at VCU. And I'm glad I was wrong. It started with Northern Illinois the Saturday before Christmas, like I think the 18th of December. He hit three threes in the first 4 minutes. And then conference play, I mean, he's blown up and it looks good because it looks like he shoots it out of a cannon. It just goes. I think he, I don't know if he was uncomfortable. I thought he had a hitch in his shot. It was just off. But right now, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like I've never seen a 3-point shooter at BCU do this. So.
Yeah, and I specifically remember still, I didn't see the beginning of the year for VCU. I was busy watching other teams. First time I flipped them on this year was Arizona State. And then they play Pitt again the next night. And they didn't have ace for either of those two games. And I remember still sending out a tweet that for stretches of the Pitt game, it looked like Shriver was the only competent offensive player they had out there. And the Rams were basically just kind of leaving him to sit in the corner. He wasn't doing anything. They weren't trying to get him the ball. And I felt like they were still doing that going into conference play. And it was really this, not even early in the Davidson game, it was the second half of the Davidson game where it felt like he was awoken into this world of off the ball cuts, moving around, kind of slinking along to find that open space. I don't know if you have any insight as to whether or not that'll be a credit to him or to Rhodes, but something changed with him. And I think that's the biggest reason why he's been playing so well.
Great point you made. I don't have any inside information or anything specific I've heard out of practice. His dad's pretty active on Twitter. It's
Yeah,
just,
yes, he
you know, he's
is. I have
yeah,
noticed that.
Randy Shriver is a he's a friend of the pod. But nothing particular. I do agree that I thought he was kind of mark, you know, just kind of hanging on the 3-point line early in the year. But in the first half against Davidson, he had a three off the dribble. Dayton fans obviously know he recently had a three hit a three off the dribble a couple nights ago. So it looks different. Overall, he looks more comfortable. I go back to the whole comment about how I thought he had a hitch in his shot. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I've seen it with pitchers before where something's off. Golfer, sometimes just something's off. But overall, the offense, you know, it isn't beautiful. It hasn't really been beautiful. I mean, the best offense we've had was 2 years ago, and we had an NBA like player on the, we had two NBA players on the roster, and it was still outside the top 100 of KenPom. But overall, it looks like he's just getting cleaner looks. He was open early in the year. He would force them. He'd force a 26 footer with a man 3 feet away, and he'll shoot 28 footers, and it's a swish. So
Was Shriver your MVP from the second half against Dayton?
I thought he played well. One player I thought that was kind of, I don't know if I'd call him underappreciated, Brandon Johns Jr. Like kind of kept us in the game in those last 4 or 5 minutes. Shriver brought us back early, I'd say, hitting a couple threes, but Brandon Johns Jr. had a nice spin move in the paint. He also had that one play where they could have called a block or a charge on Amzo. They just didn't call anything. He just laid it up. But overall, Shriver just being able to shoot. I mean, I think VCU was 0-for in the first half and three, weren't they, against Dayton?
They were. The
Yeah,
Dayton
and
hit Dayton was up 2-0 in the first half, and then Shriver hit six and Kamara hit one in the second half. And that was
yeah,
it
because
for the
Kamara,
entire
yeah.
game.
Kamara hit that one with like four. It made the lead go from 4 to 7 at one point. Shriver definitely got us going. One guy that his stat line wasn't great, but Deloach had his hand like enough hands on rebounds. Never Holmes never, you know, he had a couple of buckets, never fully got comfortable. The one other thing I'll say is we switched. So we mentioned all week on our pod last Thursday. Caleb and I specifically said Kamara kicked our butt last year. Both games had a good game in Dayton. I mean, he was the MVP at a game in Richmond where Dayton won by 30, but he was a mismatch for us last year because Hassan Ward couldn't guard him. He didn't match up with him. And we were worried about this game because we figured Deloach will go on Holmes and, you know, by no means shut him down, but at least kind of hang with him. But we didn't like Brandon Johns Jr. on Kamara. Watkins played defense on him a little bit in the second half. Now, it didn't really slow him down a little bit, but Watkins contributed there too. Overall, Shriver just hitting threes at least gave VCU some confidence to, I mean, I still can't believe they won that game, but he gave them confidence to at least make it a game.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up defense. One, because it wouldn't be a VCU podcast if we didn't talk about that, but also a great second half defensive performance was also key in the big Dayton comeback. And a year after losing one of the best on-ball defenders in the league, Vince Williams, this is still a great defensive Rams team, although maybe not quite as good as the last couple of years. But overall, who would you say is the most instrumental in keeping that together this year? And I feel like Tyler and I lament this every year, how VCU is such a well-balanced defensive team that sometimes they don't get the proper all-conference recognition for that. But if you had to pick one player as the best defender, who would that be?
I feel like you guys go on Twitter enough. Yeah, VCU fans for the most part aren't they're pretty vocal when VCU players don't get awards on the all defensive team. I'm guilty of it. But no, I fully agree. Overall, the a pure MVP. I think Nick Kern makes crazy good plays, kind of like when Doug Brooks was at VCU, he'd make great plays. The easy answer, it starts at the top at Ace. Just feeling to get the amount of steals he gets on good point guards. Last year, Jacob Gilliard had he got four steals off him at the game at the Siegel Center last year. So I'd say Ace, just putting him there. I mean, heck, last year he was guarding Lee at Davidson and like held him held him in check all night. So I'd say there, my honorable mention is DeLoach. Just beyond to be some kind of presence down low, because something that our friends at VCU Ram Nation, Matt Shelton, need this offseason. I don't know if you guys have spoken to him before, but he repeatedly said in the offseason, hey, VCU's interior defense is going to suffer, and you're not going to realize it until we start playing. Hassan Ward, for how inconsistent he was last year, he still blocked a lot of shots. DeLoach can block shots, and he gets a lot of rebounds. So DeLoach is my number two, but he's got to stay in foul trouble or stay out of foul trouble. So I'd still say it starts with Ace, just kind of leading because he can guard guys that are even bigger than him. So.
To me, I look around this conference and it's not a great year for centers. We lost a lot of good defensive centers the last few years, but beyond Daron Holmes, like Jaden DeLoach might be the second best interior defensive player in this league. But like you mentioned, the biggest thing, and this is why I don't think he'll make an all defensive team at the end of the year, he just can't keep himself off the court. He gets too sloppy down there.
He's gotten better from last year, but it's something we lament in the pod all the time. I mean, I said before, I said on Friday, if he has 2 fouls in the first 8 or 10 minutes, Dayton's going to be up 20 at the half. Fortunately, that didn't happen, but he's gotten better. It's just sometimes his hands just go down and it's a foul. And the next thing you know, Johns Jr. And then you have Shriver playing four, and against a small team that can work, you can't have playing you can't have Shriver at the four against Dayton or St. Louis. It's just not a recipe to win. So to kind of validate what you said about DeLoach and foul trouble, that's very accurate.
So, looking forward, this team has won 8 of their last 9. They're somehow red hot despite getting absolutely blown out of the building twice in the last 2 weeks in the first half. But they're racking together wins right now, and a lot of things are going well for this team. One thing that continues to be a little bit of a bugaboo, and the biggest reason why I would be afraid of this team fulfilling their fullest potential, is the rebounding. And it's odd because Jaden DeLoach, by every there's my I finally screwed up the DeLoach first name. It took till January, but he's an elite rebounder by any way you want to look at it. Traditional counting stats, advanced metrics, and Brandon Jones is pretty good on that end too. Can VCU get big contributions from the backup bigs as this year goes on?
That is a question a lot of Ram fans are asking other Ram fans. Christian Furman, PA guy from, I believe he's from the Poconos, but played private school ball in Pittsburgh. Between him and Toby Lawall, Lawall's had a couple games. He had a really good game against Vanderbilt, our home win against Vanderbilt when Stack got a toss. By the way, that viral video that was on Twitter of Stack from the sidelines on the bench, that's courtesy of me, by the way. I just hope everyone knows that it got 40,000 views on Twitter.
That is one of the best contributions to A10 Twitter because that was hilarious.
it
Definitely
was
better than the
funny.
Travis Ford ejection last week.
Oh yeah,
Definitely.
where you kind of like clapped or something. It was bad. It's funny, Vanderbilt, just real quick. Adam was at the game. He's like, I was like, I have it on video. He's like, text me it. And I texted it him, and because he has better service because he works actually in media. So, and service inside the Siegel Center is awful, but he put it on Twitter and 40,000 views. But anyway, the Vanderbilt game, Lawal got some PT that night. He was someone I was like, I don't think he can't play against Dayton. He's too tiny. And then there was one point in the first half where him and Shriver were together. And I think Dayton went on like a 9-2 run in the first half. And I we're texting the group chat. It's just not good. But I don't know the answer to that regarding depth down low. Furman, he played a minute against Dayton, had a wide open layup and missed it too. I was like, yeah, it was one of those where you're jumping up and down and like, oh no, he didn't go in. That is something that still kind of hurt in the back of my mind. It's like, hey, clearly a team that can compete at the top of the A-10, first, second, third, fourth, that area. But can you trust them in a conference tournament? I was going to say win 3 games in 3 days, but unfortunately, it's now 3 games in 4 days. Can you trust our bigs to just be able to carry that for 3 days? That's the question I'd ask every Ram fan, because I don't think Shriver's going to cool down eventually, but he could be a shooter in conference play. Do we have any depth down low? I don't know the answer to that, and I think that's the one kind of, I think that's the elephant in the room for BC the rest of the year.
Yeah, and it's something that came out with Lawal against Holmes and against Jahlil Barre against Duquesne. Like these two guys, Fermin and Lawal, are both still super skinny. They're gonna have to put on a lot of muscle next year. But it's good luck for VCU. Like I said, a lot of the big physical centers are out of this conference right now. I look ahead, you play Dayton one more time, you gotta play Josh Oduro and George Mason. And other than that, not too many centers who are going to be able to punish the Rams inside, but we know they'll come across at least one in Brooklyn. So let's start to look at the best case scenario for VCU. I saw a bracket forecast right before we went ahead and started recording this, put out basically what needs to happen for VCU to still get an at-large bid. Hilarious after all the VCU fans spent all of last week telling Dayton fans they were idiots for talking about that. And I mean, the Pitt win is at least something. So, just like I said with Dayton, if VCU can find a way to go like 16-2, this could happen. But the way this conference is playing out, that's probably just not going to happen. But let's say best case scenario for VCU. They're a top two team in this conference the rest of the year. They go ahead, they win in Brooklyn, they just go grab that automatic bid and find their way in. What are the two or three biggest things that need to happen between now and mid-March for the Rams to be a successful team?
Great question. And I do agree that any kind of at-large talk with anyone other is kind of whack in the A-10 this
Basically,
season.
got to go like undefeated from here on out.
St. Louis kind of feels like Bonaventure a year ago, where they're like all their metrics are like in the 80s and 90s, but they have good wins. But do you see St. Louis going 15 and 30? I just don't see it. I think they're a 13-5 team. So regarding VCU, to be a team that is, definitely a top four team, but definitely a top four team. They need to go about 13-5, more than likely. You could be 12-6, finish fourth. I will say didn't one of you pick Duquesne to get a double bye solely because they beat
Beating
BCU?
VCU on the tiebreaker. Yes, that was me.
That was you. So we'll see. Again, I think BC
Well,
that's a
here,
good call.
I'll jump in ahead. I'll jump in on you here for a second on that. I also predicted Davidson to be ahead of them, which is just not going to happen at this point.
You had
So
Davidson too, right?
the biggest, it was Duquesne and Davidson would both finish ahead of the Rams. To me, the biggest threat, if that still happens, is if Richmond can finish ahead of the Rams. And then we might have some sort of Duquesne VCU battle, but the number of contenders to knock off VCU is starting to shrink here.
I had a feeling it was going to happen, but we didn't look good in the out of conference, so it made sense. But for VCU to be a team that's 13-5, top four in the conference, along with Dayton, St. Louis, Duquesne, Richmond, Mason, that kind of field. I think there needs to be some kind of presence down low, whether it's a game against a smaller team where Watkins can play at the four and get, because he can rebound. He can rebound. If he's playing the four against a smaller team, he can get 6-7 rebounds. And he'd be done it a couple times this season. That's the one thing I'll say. The other thing is a starter that can break out, like if Nunn or Watkins can become a reliable scorer. I know it feels like it's probably not going to happen because it's already January and it hasn't. But you can bet on Ace for having double digit scoring. Maybe not, rarely is he going to have 25 points like he did against Vanderbilt, but double digit scoring and a good five or six assists, a couple steals. Johns Jr. is going to put up 12 points every night, five or six rebounds. And some, DeLoach will have 7 points, six rebounds. Off the bench, Shriver will hit a couple threes. Kern will have a couple steals. Can Nunn or Watkins, those two specifically, be guys in the conference play, average 10 points a game? They don't need to be stars, but someone, hit two threes as starters or Watkins or off the bench. I have a hard time seeing VCU reach its full potential without having three legitimate scorers, and the two I mentioned were Ace and Johns Jr. And Schreiber is fun off the bench, but he's going to cool down at some point. If Nunn or Watkins can be someone down the, in the last eight games last year, Keyshawn Curry in the second half of A-10 play blew up. That's one of the I've watched VCU basketball. I'm 30 years old. I've watched VCU basketball since '99. That's one of the best conference play runs in a second half from a player that I didn't expect seeing it ever. Could Watkins or Nunn be like Keyshawn Curry last year? And that's kind of the thing. If they went to A-10 play and they had something like that, I'd feel like they were the A-10 tournament like favorites. Until then, I think they're like everyone else. It's kind of like, I guess we'll see what happens in Brooklyn. So.
And Jameer Watkins is so talented that I had to go check and make sure that he wasn't already averaging 10 points a game in conference play. He is not.
No.
So you are right there. But we'll close it out with this. So you gave us the best case scenario. What's your prediction? How does the rest of this year go?
I think VCU, so their next few games are interesting. 4-1, they go to Richmond. They have two huge games, or excuse me, they're 4-1. They got UMass tomorrow night. We're recording this on Monday. They have UMass Tuesday night at home at Richmond. Then they have Mason and Bonaventure at home. And
Who are
that's the
both
only time they
really
play
bad
this
on the road.
bad on the road. I don't think anyone would bet them to get a win at the Siegel Center. That's the only time they play them. I think VCU is going to end up ahead of those two teams anyway. But 2 weeks ago, I was thinking, hey, those could be huge wins. And you obviously have Dayton towards the end of the year. You get Slade twice. VCU's got a favorable schedule down the stretch. They go to GW, who's that kind of eighth, ninth, 10th place team. They go to St. Joe's. They host Fordham. I think VCU, I still think 15 and 3, 14 and 4 is a stretch. I think they go about 13 and 5. 13 and 5, I think. Dayton maybe a game ahead of them, but I think they're right in it with St. Louis. I think they'll finish metrics wise ahead of Duquesne, but I think Duquesne with that schedule, we've all looked at the schedules all year. UMass, Richmond, Mason, Duquesne, one of them's going to get there, partially because they're playing well, partially because their schedule's favorable. I think they're right in that second, anywhere between 1 and 4, depending on what happens. Because I don't want to toot my horn so much about the Dayton game from Friday night, because last year VCU fans, myself included, did that, and then the return trip was not very pretty. Dayton could easily come in February and kick VCU in the mouth, but I think it's a top four finish. I feel good about that right now, and then it's kind of see what happens in Brooklyn.
All right, Connor, where can everybody find your great new podcast here?
So myself, Adam Epstein, who's our host, Chris Mason, and Caleb Jones, all friends, three VCU alum, and one another long timer like me, at Black Gold Fan Podcast. That's on Twitter. We're pretty new. Just started in, I guess our first pod was end of October, beginning of November. You can find us on Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Spotify is my go-to. I like that the best. But you can find us there. We're still kind of getting a part of the Twitter game, but I still use my personal Twitter for a lot of things. But like I said, at Black Gold Fan Pod, almost weekly. Right now, it's pretty much weekly. There might be times where it goes 9, 10 days between a pod, but give us a follow, give us a listen. I can't thank you guys enough for having me on here. We have a lot of VCU fans following us. We want some more A10 fans following us. A10's got great content. I love the West Pine Bill guys. Gold Standard's excellent. They're some of my favorite guys in the conference. And obviously you guys do a great job too. And it's important that you guys have a presence, because the A10 as a whole, like, I mean, you guys, was this year five for you guys?
Year five.
I think I
Still
started
waiting
listening
on
to you.
prebids too.
I guess you started the first year, 2018, 19. I think I started listening to you guys year two, 2019, 20. And I was kind of getting irritated at times, because one of you guys liked Richmond a lot that year. And I was like, dude, they're gonna fall off. They ended up finishing second, going 14-4. I don't know which one. One of you just liked them a lot for some reason, and it ended up happening. Black and Gold Fan Podcast, like I said, weekly reports. We're huge basketball fans, all four of us. Two of us have season tickets. Adam, the host, it works in the media locally in Richmond. We're all Richmond natives and live less than 5 minutes from the Stews. So give us a follow, give us a listen, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, everyone go and listen to the Black and Gold Fan Experience. We just started throwing that on in the last few weeks here, and it is worth your time. Connor, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it, Tyler. Appreciate it, Matt.
All right, another thank you to Connor for coming on the show. We're gonna do our all fun teams here in a moment, but Matt, real quick before we jump into this, I wanted to ask you a question that I did not let you prepare for.
All right.
How do you grade Tumani Kamara's performance on Friday? Because in some ways, he put up one of the most impressive two-way dominating performances we've seen all year from anyone in college basketball. And then he threw in nine turnovers, including three late in the game that kind of killed them.
I think you still give him an A, maybe not an A plus, but he was the reason Dayton was dominating in the first half and nobody else could put the ball in the hoop on offense. So look, I think what it comes down to, he had to play 40 minutes. In the last couple minutes of the game, he was really struggling, and that's when a lot of his turnovers happened. Dayton just isn't as deep as we were hoping for this year, and as a result, guys like Kamara have had to play a ton of minutes every single game. And I think that's going to be a concern the rest of the season. But I'd still say he had a good game. What would you
Yeah,
think?
I gave him a B plus because of you have to wait that last minute with a heavier percentage. He was unbelievable on the defensive end. If you go back and look, he's guarding Ace Baldwin for most of the second half until, as Connor mentioned, and we didn't really go into it. I asked him that question to see if he said Brandon Johns because I thought he was the guy that was so critical to them chipping away. And he was, honestly, he was crushing Amziel, who's had a good defensive year. That was his worst defensive performance of the season. They switched Kamara onto him. VCU literally stopped giving him the ball. Like, that's how much they were trying to stray away. And then after Shriver hits the 6-3, they put Kamara on him. Like, he was just kind of taking out guys left and right, but I thought he was the biggest story of the whole weekend. Saturday was kind of nonchalant. Like, there's a few things we could touch on. Like, St. Joe's is just clearly not the worst team in this conference, which I think a lot of people believed going into that Loyola game. They laid the smackdown on them. St. Bonaventure just continues to play great at home. I'm not taking them super seriously until they can at least hang with a good team on the road. Anything else for you from Saturday?
Are
UMass
you?
actually won without Fernandes, which is good.
That was impressive. Do you want to comment on St. Louis scoring 81 points without Yuri Collins hunting for assists?
Yeah, GW's defense just sucks. Like, that was the thing. I made that joke and then forgot about it for about an hour because I was watching UMass and opened up Twitter to like 27 notifications. And like, everyone just either got insulted by it or took the joke immediately. I was expecting at least one person to respond with, yeah, except doing that to GW's defense means nothing.
I mean, if there is one story, one, it was hilarious, the response to that tweet. And a lot of people didn't pick up on the joke, but we did finally get a vintage Javante Perkins performance. That was definitely his
Yeah.
best game of the year. And that could be a really good sign for St. Louis if he gets back on track here.
If he can play at 80% of that with Collins continuing to hold the ball as much as he does, then they might be the favorite now. At least without Dayton having the guards back. I don't know. I mean, St. Louis is they're picking it up here. I'm not ready to get sucked in yet because every time we get sucked in on St. Louis, they go and lose to Southern Illinois Edwardsville. But it's getting close. They're playing probably the best basketball they have all year outside of that Providence game. Because GW was ready to just go up and down with them from the tip. And St. Louis then withstood the massive Colonials run in the second half. So it's interesting.
And a win at GW isn't nothing this year.
It's
That's
not like
they're pretty good.
GW's offense. The way GW was able to score the ball for 32 minutes of that game. Now, granted, they had 0 points in the other eight, but that's tough to withstand. And they needed Perkins to go to that level, or they would have lost that game.
Yeah. All right. Last thing before we get into the all fun teams, GW. First in offense in the A-10 right now, 14th in defense. So go ahead and bet the over. I mean, they're such a fun team to watch, but man, they play no defense at all.
Wait,
So
who's worst on D, St. Joe's or Loyola?
it's gotta be Loyola. I think Loyola might be Let's see real quick. They are 14th in offense, 15th in defense.
Yeah,
Still
there we
waiting on that
go.
first state headline.
I mean, St. Joe's per KenPom is actually better on defense than on offense, which is just a true testament to how the fact that they take way too many threes.
Small sample sizes. It's gonna catch up eventually, but God, Loyola though, two games in the hole already.
One thing before we move on, one thing I just want to mention, since we have the KenPom page up, and this is definitely going to make people mad. Josh Aduro is now fourth on the all KenPom team ahead of Yuri Collins. So Yuri Collins in fifth, potentially teetering on the brink of falling off. And I just want the St. Louis fans to hear that and just get pissed off. So it is, for those wondering, it's Holmes one, Burton two, Kamara three, Oduro four, Collins five. I have no idea who six is, but I feel like there's probably a pretty sizable gap between five and six.
Well, at this rate, VCU needs to get somebody on there, and I think that would be Ace, but he also missed some games. That might be hurting him too in the non-conference.
So, all right. For those who are unfamiliar, sometime in late January into February, we'll go through, we draft basically just the five guys who we have felt have been the most enjoyable to watch this year. The only rules, because we do it as a draft, we cannot take the same person. And the 2020 Dayton rule, you cannot have two guys from the same team because then it just kind of starts to get redundant. So, Matt, call it in the air, heads or tails for the right to pick first here. We did not do this ahead of time this time.
We didn't. I feel like we never do. I'll take heads, though.
It was tails. I'll give you the first pick anyway. I'll take the next two on the snake.
Right, that's fine. I feel like so. I went really heavy on newcomers this year. Like, I don't want to take Jerron Holmes. I don't want to take Yuri Collins. We know they're
I
gone.
was going to just let you take them because then I was just going to take Kamara anyway.
I have him on my list. I don't know if I want him after the VCU game, after the end. We know end up fine. I'll take Monte Kamara. I'll fall into the trap. And I think he has definitely been more fun to watch this year than last year. To me, it's just a combination of things. Right now, he's second in the A10 in offensive rebounding rate. He can compete with any player in the conference on the glass. I feel like he's become a lot more well-rounded of a player. Like his assists are up quite a bit from last year. He's doing a lot more for Dayton on the offensive end than just scoring. And I feel like this is a cliche that you say about any athletic wing, but I truly think he is one of a very small handful of players that can guard anyone on the court. Like you talked about, he's guarding Ace a lot in the VCU game, but he can also match up with power forwards and he has the strength to bang down low. But I think part of the all fun charm too is just the volatility. And you are going to get a lot of silly mistakes. You're going to get a lot of turnovers. But at the end of the day, Kamara had the number one dunk on SportsCenter last week against Fordham. So the highlight reel plays are unbelievable with him. And I think that combination makes him a fair pick for the all fun team.
So to me, because I do like to focus on some of the more unheralded guys, but there's three stars that are just above everyone else, and Kamara's one of them. So with the other two picks, I'll take Daron Holmes. He leads the nation in dunks. He's top 100 nationally in both effective field goal percentage and true shooting percentage. He's 85th in the country in block rate. He's the reason that I discovered that KenPom has National Player of the Year standings. He might be an All-American. Like, he's just everything that's fun about basketball. He dunks, he runs like a gazelle, he blocks shots like a maniac. He's got a decent little jumper that makes you cringe when he takes the three, and now it at least hits the rim every time. So that's becoming more enjoyable. He's the type of guy that makes basketball fun because of how great he is on both ends of the court. And I actually wasn't sure between him and Kamara for first just because of how sensational Kamara's been defensively. But I'm happy with that. And then the other one is Tyler Burton of Richmond. Like, it's the same thing as Holmes, where He just represents so many of the things that make basketball enjoyable. He's a 6'8 guy who moves and shoots like he's 6'2. He's been attacking the boards for years. He's a great shooter, a great scorer, and he's just sensational to watch. And as someone who enjoys the NBA as well, like I do, I'm getting excited for the fact that he's going to be a very good bench player for someone in the league in 2 or 3 years here. We're going to get to keep watching Tyler Burton.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Okay, well, I have to get more obscure now. Like, we just took arguably the three best players in the conference, or at least three of the top five we took. So let's go a little bit deeper. For my first pick here, I'm going to take one of your guys. Give me Trey Clark of Duquesne.
Would have been on my five, but that's okay. I got an easy backup for him.
All right. I was between two Duquesne guys, so maybe I know who your other is. But, I mean, the man threw a dunk to himself off the backboard in the big win against VCU. He's second in the A-10 in steal rate right now. Compared to when he was at VCU, he's a legitimate three-point threat. He's making a ton of threes for Duquesne. And overall, like, his ability to both shoot and drive to the basket, he's just a much more complete player than the last time we saw him in the A-10. And that's provided a lot of excitement to Duquesne. He gave the Dukes and Keith Van Brod exactly what they needed, just a menace on the perimeter that doesn't give up any easy shots. And that's been fun to watch his journey from a role player to now it's someone who could be borderline all-conference if Duquesne reaches their ceiling.
Yeah, and the thing I'll throw in, because he hit the nail on the head, he plays like a legitimate crazy person. And as someone who's been covering Duquesne this year too, and gets to hear Keith Dambrot's reactions to it after the game, he's making Dambrot crazy too. So that kind of adds to the enjoyment. But the only other thing that I want to hit on, he jumps passing lanes like a maniac. Mm-hmm. And so often he will have plays throughout the game. This will happen 3 or 4 times where either he's getting a wide open transition dunk or the guy he's guarding is getting a wide open jumper because he should stay home and just doesn't.
Yeah. All right. I guess, do I get a second pick here on the snake draft? I will take the guy who I think has become the number one heat check player in the A-10, and that's Daryl Banks, who already has 2 30-point games. He's been on fire in conference play, and I just feel like he can turn a game faster than anyone in the conference right now, where like he was shut down in the entire first half against Rhode Island last week, came back with a strong second half and got the Bonnies back into the game late. Just some of the three-pointers in traffic, like he's not afraid to shoot anything and they just go in. He's been a lot of fun recently. And I feel like after kind of an inconsistent start to the year where we weren't really sure what his role was going to be on St. Bonaventure and if he was maybe doing a little bit too much, I think it turns out that the Bonnies are best served when he can just go on those crazy runs by himself. And yeah, he's just had a huge impact.
All right, good. You didn't take my favorite guard pick for this, though. And that's GW freshman Maximus Edwards, who is, he's just a dart. Like he, it's not like, it's not the same like crazy quickness that Kyrell Luke has, but when Edwards gets the ball, he just basically surges. He's like the guy, he's actually comparing him to another human isn't proper here. It's like the car that advertises the 0 to 60 in however many seconds. Maximus Edwards gets the ball, just takes 2 steps, and the next thing you know, he's already in the paint. And he's a delight. He's got a great catch and shoot jumper. He's got a beautiful little floater to his game. This is on a GW team with two other great scoring guards, and Brendan Adams could also have been deserving of consideration for this team. But I mean, Maximus's burst just jumps off the screen to you. The name doesn't hurt either, Maximus Edwards. He sounds like he's ready to go into battle at the foul line. He's the best thing on which just a super fun GW offense. And then my favorite role guy to watch this year. UMass is DeAndre Dominguez, who's just the perfect old school, does everything well, does nothing poorly guy. He's a basketball nerd's dream. Everything he does contributes to the game. He basically just gets rebounds, makes layups, and doesn't let guys go past him. There's nothing fancy to him. He's like the opposite of Daron Holmes. Doesn't matter. DeAndre Dominguez, who, by the way, needs to be in the top 3 to 4 in minutes on UMass's roster now, because he's just better than any of their other forwards, save for maybe Matt Cross.
Yeah, and he was huge in the Rhode Island game. Seems like he's starting to get a much bigger role recently. So, yeah, he has been huge. And I don't think anybody gave him credit coming into the year, because the Minutemen brought in all these new transfers and they had a new coach. So I don't think anyone thought some holdover off the bench would do anything. And he's been great.
I think a lot of people forgot he was even still on that team.
Yeah. All right, my next pick. You know, after we stopped recording with Connor, we were talking about one of our favorites, Mo Alie-Cox from VCU, who went on to be a tight end. And I was just thinking about it. If one player in the A-10 went on to the NFL, I think it might be Loyola's Phil Olsen, who is just built like a tank, one of the most physical players in the conference. And he just will do something electrifying a couple times a game. He also has these moments where you're like, yeah, I could tell he was in Division II, just some of the turnovers that he and everyone else on Loyola has. But he's a great rebounder, a great shot blocker. He's fearless taking the ball to the rim. And overall, there were some high hopes for him going into the year, although you never really know what to expect when someone comes up from Division I. But he's been Loyola's best player. He at least gives you a reason to watch the Rampers, because he is one of the few guys that can make something happen on his own on that team. And then for my fifth and final pick, I think I was actually going to go with a different UMass player, and that is freshman Tafara Gafare, who this is maybe more of a futures pick once he gets more minutes next year and moving forward, but super high steal and block rate. He's a really good defender with his length at like 6'10", guarding guys on the wing. He's willing to shoot threes, and he's actually not too bad at it, but I love watching him drive to the rim, and he's almost Giannis-esque with these huge strides when he goes to the basket. And I just feel like once he continues learning the game of basketball at the A-10 level, we're going to see him turn into a superstar in the next couple seasons.
All right. Three freshmen have been mentioned here. So that's interesting. And none of them were Jason Nelson.
I thought about him too. He has been having a great season. He reminds me of Bobby Gilliard, honestly. Just you can tell that he practiced under him last year.
So I'm already too big, so I gotta leave off Sam Manenga and Jalen Deloach. I didn't want to take another star, but since you took Trey Clark, I kinda have to now. And that's his wingmate, Day-Day Grant. Dynamite shooter, amazing attacking the basket. And maybe one of the most enjoyable things about him is the patience. When you really watch Day-Day Grant, you can tell just kind of how deliberate and calculating he is as to whether or not he's going to shoot. And it's actually hurt Duquesne a little bit in spots that he's so unselfish, he doesn't want to take tough shots, even though he's Duquesne's best scorer. And when he really gets to be his best is when he understands that he needs to go into that realm. You think like the second half of the St. Joe's game when things were slowing down. All he does when he gets the ball is find his way into space. Sometimes that's wide open. Sometimes that's turning a double team into one guy. But once that opens up, he's more lethal than anyone else in this conference. So I'll throw him on there. I thought about it too. One bench guy I want to shout out is Rostik Nowitzki on Fordham. All he does is block shots, get offensive rebounds, and get layups, but that's good enough for me. My one other honorable mention, Jan Farrell, who basically lost his spot to DeAndre Dominguez this weekend. He's going to be the best dunker in this league as soon as Daron Holmes is gone. He's an awesome rebounder. He actually reminds me a lot of Ticket Gaines, who unfortunately misses out this year because of his injuries. And then my developmental pick, I couldn't take him because he only averages like 8 minutes a game. But next year, Khalil Barre will be in this discussion. He's just this giant muscular mound for Duquesne who just pummels people on the boards every time he's in the game. It's awesome to watch him basically just scrap with these people, especially the up-close angle that I get to see for him for a lot of these.
All right. Yeah, those were some good picks. I guess for some... So for Duquesne, my second guy actually that I was thinking about was Tevin Brewer, but maybe that's just because I have an affinity for 5'8" point guards. But Day-Day Grant's a good pick too.
Brewer is better right now. Honestly, Kareem Rozier might actually be the more enjoyable guy because he's such a maniac when he's on the court. Down on defense, screaming at opposing players, crashing the boards, and he's the same size as Brewer.
How about for one more pick too, just because I think he was our entire St. Joe's preview and he got a ton of hype, but Kasper Kozak is pretty fun for the Hawks. He just does everything.
He wouldn't have been on there like a week ago for me. I watched every minute of 3 St. Joe's games in a 6-day span. God help me. But yeah, he's the funnest guy on St. Joe's.
Yeah. St. Joe's actually, I mean, you had a good tweet, like, they're one of the most entertaining pillow fight teams we've seen. Lynn Greer, too, has become a triple nickel machine recently. He's actually, now that he's stopped shooting so much and he's getting a lot more assists, he's been a great point guard for the Hawks the last couple of games.
God, they both might be slightly too good for this to happen, but if we could get a GW St. Joe's pillow fight game, that could legitimately be first to 100.
That could be our 8-9 game.
St. Joe's can't get that high.
St. Joe's isn't. You're right.
The problem is we would have basically needed GW to be the best team in the pillow fight and St. Joe's to fall to 15th. But I just don't think St. Joe's is going to drop to that point here. So as we record this right now, GW's in 6th. So maybe a St. Joe's upset and they play each other on day 2, but we will see. Before we close this out, we've just been throwing out fake trades as we go now. I have 3 prepared for today. I don't know if you have any.
I do not, but let's hear them.
All right. I got 2 completely insane ones. I'll throw the palate cleanser in the middle. All right. So first trade, it's going to be a media swap. LaSalle sends Cale Beers to NBC. For USA's best camera operator. I can't do it anymore. Like, I don't know if we talked about it. I know the Gola guys properly ripped into it. When LaSalle beat Rhode Island, we didn't get to see the last shot of the game because the camera operator just didn't move the camera. But not only that, like, it's so shaky during the broadcast. It's like anyone who's motion sick probably gets ill watching these games. Like, it's not that crazy. Can we just get somebody over there with a steady hand to do this? But meanwhile, as much as I love Carol Beers' announcing, LaSalle continues to play these games at the same time as other A-10 teams. Their 2 most entertaining games of the season, I only saw the last 2 minutes because there was just a better conference game on. I had them on the laptop on mute. I didn't get to properly enjoy him. So let's get him on USA. We'll throw him with Dr. John. 2 Philly guys, put them out there every Saturday. That would be a delightful pairing.
Sal also, they just don't make enough threes. Like, his talents would be better served on a team that can actually shoot.
Can we get Cale Beers on a Duquesne game? Just really losing it for a Day-Day Grant or Trey Clark Heacheck? Maybe against something with Richmond? Yeah, there's just a lot more fun teams that he could be on. Even if he was rooting for St. Joe's, as we know, sometimes they're capable of getting crazy hot. All right, number 2, just kind of a simple one. Camp Brown's playing out of his mind. He deserves some discussion. He's not going to get it because St. Joe's is, even after 2 wins, still in 14th place. let's get them on Richmond. Like right now, the Spiders are definitely a contender come A-10 tournament time, but I don't think they're one of the favorites. I don't think they're quite there. Cam Brown could give them that spark. What this team needs is just another scorer who can step up in the nights where, let's say, Jason Roach and Isaiah Bigelow and Matt Grace just aren't playing at their absolute best. Typically, if one of those guys goes off, Richmond's in good shape, but they're all role guys who are kind of taking turns there. Cam Brown could be a great scoring sidekick for Burton. And for Richmond, to pay for that expensive rental, you probably got to kick back Marcus Randolph. Just be another good, interesting young guy for St. Joe's to add in with Lynn Greer, with Reynolds, with all those recruits coming in next year.
Yeah, St. Joe's just always building for the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of just where they got to be here. The last one is the first, I believe, ever 14 fake trade.
Oh, no.
It starts off with the same idea behind Richmond. Duquesne is a contender. They're definitely not a favorite. Where's their biggest hole? The backup wings are struggling right now. And they got to leave Day-Day Grant and Trey Clark out there for 34, 35 minutes a game at this point. They got plenty of shooting. They need to go help their perimeter defense. You have mentioned to me multiple times now that Loyola Chicago looks like they might be in a bad spot for next year. They do not have much talent from an already 15th place roster coming back. So let's get those two in the room together. David Dixon is buried on Duquesne's bench. He can't even get in the game right now. When he did against Richmond, he almost saved them in the final 8 minutes. So we're going to send him over to Loyola in exchange for Marquise Kennedy, who now becomes the best backup defensive wing in the league. Duquesne can call on him to try to shut down a hot perimeter shooter. Him, Grant, and Clark together might be the best wing rotation in the entire conference. But, you know, Duquesne's probably got to kick in a little bit extra there, too. They're going to have to send over Quincy McGriff because his minutes are just going to be gone at this point. But the Dukes get a big upgrade on the backup wing. Loyola has no need for Quincy McGriff. He doesn't help out a bad team. They're going to send him over to Dayton because, as we saw at the end of the VCU game, they literally just need another person who can dribble the ball up the court. And maybe they don't need him at all come March. But to survive these next few weeks, they need another guy who can give them 10 minutes at point guard. Dayton's flush with cash. They can send some NIL dollars over to Loyola, who will certainly be happy to have that money. Now for the Ramblers, they're going to have to get David Dixon minutes. They already got two good bigs in Phil Alston and Tom Welch. Coming off the bench, conference play, their best bench guy's been Bryce Golden. Been just a super consistent 15-minute game guy for them. Now they're like the bad baseball team who's just got an extra veteran reliever. His contract's about to run out. They really have no use for him. They'd rather use the young guys. They'll shoot him over to St. Bonaventure. I know Mark Schmidt doesn't really like to use his bench, but God, Moses Flowers won the Richmond game for him. He was their best player coming off the bench. And one of the Bonnie's biggest issues is that Chad Venning's just out there a little too much. He needs some rest. He needs a good 10-minute a game backup behind him. They'll take Bryce Golden. He might be able to swing a big game or two for them. They send back three national TV broadcasts. Now, Duquesne's not quite ready to sign off on this. They feel like giving up two for one's a little bit too much. So we'll send those national TV games over to the Dukes, who, in this era of mass televisation, Duquesne plays three national TV games this year. That's it. They have 18 home ESPN Plus games. That has to be the most in the nation this year. So to summarize, Duquesne, they get a great wing defender in Kennedy. They get some extra TV exposure. Dayton gets Quincy McGriff to help in the ball handling department. Bonaventure gets Bryce Golden to come off the bench. Loyola gets a really nice project in David Dixon and some NIL cash so that they can maybe go grab the next Ben Schweiger.
All right, I guess that sounds good. I lost track of writing everything down after the Quincy McGriff trade, so sounds good to me, but it's going to be a lot of paperwork in that one.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. And I threw it in passing. We should have mentioned earlier, now unrelated to the trades, shout out to Moses Flowers, who is ready to battle Kobe Brea for Sixth Man of the Year. He was
Yeah.
Bonaventure's best player in the win over Richmond. And he was a guy who was pretty awful to start the year and is now just a critical piece for the Bonnies.
Yeah, I feel like the sixth man race too, like talking about VCU earlier. I know Nick Kern has started the last two games, but if he shifts back to the bench, like either him or
He's
Jim.
never going to score enough. Like, it's just not going to happen for
I
him.
mean, either him or
Watkins, now,
Jameer
if Watkins
Watkins, though,
stays there,
he could.
good.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something if we have the two reigning A-10 Sixth Men of the Year battling each other for the award? That doesn't happen because normally, if you win Sixth Man of the Year, you end up starting pretty soon after.
I mean, in a year like this, that's the game within the game that you have to get excited about. And that might be the thing that only the two of us keep track of.
Oh, I'm sure the VCU fans will be paying attention and will be quite mad if Jameer Watkins puts in a good year and doesn't take home the hardware.
Going to be a nice looking banner in the stew. Jameer Watkins, sixth man of the year.
Two times. All right. That does it for this week's episode of the Three Bid League podcast. Once again, a thank you to Connor. Be sure to go check out the Black and Gold Fan podcast with him and all of his buddies. And a thank you to you guys for listening to this. Please continue to give us 5 stars on iTunes. Give us some comments on there. Reach out to us at 3BidLeaguePod on Twitter if you have any comments. And let's enjoy another good week of basketball. The schedule is very spread out. Huge schedule oddity, only two games on Wednesday. We might never see that again.